access number 29529, Mr. Tom Austin, Reel 2. Now, we're talking about the sort of development of the German bombing from around about September 40 onwards for a year or so. What impacted the other? I mean, were the four hits on your road, were they all done on the same night?
That was on the same night. There was an occasion later when there was a bomber further up the road. Can I say by this time, our activity, I had a girlfriend at the time. Actually, it was a local butcher's daughter. And we used to go to a place called the Montague Ballroom, which was above a cinema called the Palladium in Ealing, which originated as a theatre, actually. And in that occasion, not only did we go there, but I used to go ice skating.
Well, tell us about the dance halls first.
Yeah, the dance hall.
What were they like? Because they don't have, not as such, they don't have.
No.
People can't imagine what they're like. What was a night out with a girlfriend at a dance hall like?
Well, I mean, it was the swing area coming in from America at the time. And what happened then, if there was the air raid developed in that locality, you were told to leave the place and go down in the shelter. Well, there was no shelter, as a matter of fact, in the dance hall. And I know one night one bomb dropped on the railway line there, the western region, which ran along the back and blew part of the windows in. Well, they weren't, they were covered with things to keep the blackout. And we used to walk home from there. One of the
now, hang on. What was the dance hall like, though? I mean, you still haven't said anything about the dance hall.
Dance hall.
What did it? I mean, was it a bar? Was it?
We didn't have alcohol. It was plain dancing.
Would it be live music?
Oh, live music, definitely. As a matter of fact, the band there, they progressed and became one of the features on the BBC.
Remember their name?
The name.
That's all right. That's a bit different.
I can't remember at the moment.
And they play what, the swing?
Yes, swing music. And, of course, dancing in those days was quite different from what it is these days.
Had you been taught, or were you natural?
Well, as a matter of fact, funny you should say that, because I used to go down with my school friends at weekends sometime, cycle down to Maidenhead. And we used to have dance class down there, where we used to learn. That was quite an experience, because we used to do a lot of cycling then. I had quite a rally dropped handlebar bicycle. And one of the things I can remember there, for instance, is we had to go through to Maidenhead, go through Slough. Of course, the Slough trading estate was quite a big affair at that time. And they had a smoke screen. Now, that was interesting, because they used to have these bins along the road, and they set them off when an air raid started. Completely black smoke. I mean, you went in one end fairly clean and you came out absolutely covered. Also, my friend, I was not a musician as such. I was interested in music. They had a band where they used to run all over the area doing what I suppose nowadays is called gigs. And I used to go with them. I mean, many a night we walked miles with instruments back home. The family lived in Acton at the time, you see.
And this was a jazz band or a swing band?
No, just ordinary, just band. I mean, it would be a saxophone, guitar, drums, and a trumpet.
And what was a gig like? Were these in pubs or were these in...
Oh, no, they were in school halls and things like that. Very enjoyable, I mean... you only paid about threepence to go into the place, etc. But
and you were acting as a sort of what they now call a roadie.
Yeah, exactly.
Helping
carrying the things. I mean, I can remember once coming back from Twickenham. We got as far as Hayes, and the air raid got a bit severe, and we finished up on the railway station there in the waiting room, where they got the instruments out again and started to play. You know, you made life as good as possible. That's what it really amounted to.
Was the cinema, I mean, the cinema was very popular. Was it popular with you?
Oh, yes.
What was so good about the cinema in those days? How did it differ from now?
Differ from now? Well, Let me think. You see, I'm going back a bit now. When I was at Holland Park, one of the school friends there, his father worked at a place called the Gomont State Kilburn, which was then the largest cinema in London, largest cinema in Europe, as a matter of fact. And they specialised in a terrific programme, much more than you get now. I mean, you only get one film, I gather, these days. I don't go filming. But this would happen. They had special buses laid on. You literally had a newsreel. You had the main film. You had a B film. And you had a stage show. And possibly there was an organ there that it was about a four-hour programme, which was absolutely marvellous. I think the building still exists. I don't know what's happened to it now.
Now, would other cinemas have that much on, or would it be scaled down, but a bit more than now?
No, they had quite a lot on.
What was your local cinema in?
Well, there were local. We had quite a few local cinemas. There was one at Northfields. There was the one that played him in Ealing. You weren't short of cinemas at all. And
now, I presume you didn't drink at that time?
No.
Were you teetotal or just did? I mean, was that a sort of decision or was it just you didn't?
No, I just didn't. I wasn't interested in drink.
When the bomb started, did that make the fire watching a little bit more pointed? I mean, were you still acting as fire watching?
Oh, yes.
Now, what was fire watching like in a raid?
Well, if you heard something come down and you weren't quite sure where it was, when it eased off and there were... See, the aircraft would come across individually. It wasn't a mass... I mean, it was obviously for the dock area.
But not a...
No, because my father had to go up there, as a matter of fact, when the docks got hit that particular night. And as a matter of fact, that night when the docks were hit... and because that was the beginning of it all, as far as the bombing was concerned there. I was down at Hounslow, where you could see the fire from even there.
Now, what would you do then as a fire watcher? We're talking about when the raids actually start. So you wouldn't actually do anything while the raid was on. You just stay
in? No, you do just stay in. And
now, what about, what would you do afterwards?
Afterwards, if there were suspected bombs, you'd go and look for where they'd come down. You'd probably find a hole in the row somewhere, you know. And then he reported that to the warden.
Were you still meant to put out incendiaries?
Yes.
Yes,
you were expected to, any incendiaries on the last name. But
so how were you meant to do it? Was it just your stirrup?
Well, you had a stirrup pump. If you could get some sand, you had sand. But you just had a bucket of water and used this stirrup pump, which is, it was... not really effective, let's face it. I mean, the quality of the incendiaries. The individual house, I mean, it'd be blocks of places that would suffer from fire more than anything else. The individual house would, if it was a direct hit, of course, it wouldn't be a question of fire. It just demolished.
Was your house hit at all?
No, the house next door was. But what can I say on that?
just any more incidents you remember from raids, you know?
Yes. There was a daylight raid where we got sent home from work, and I know I just missed the bomb that came down on the butcher's shop, it was an oil bomb at the time. These oil bombs were, well, obviously spread fire if necessary, rather dirty affair. I remember there was what we used to call...
Were you near when it went off? What was it like?
Yes, quite near.
What? Tell me about it, because I'm not familiar with oil bombs.
When you heard the thing come down, you went flat on your face. One of the dangers particularly, I mean... The air raid, the anti-aircraft fire, the big trouble there was the amount of shrapnel coming down that could hit you. For instance, if you came home from the dance hall, you probably had to go down in a shelter halfway home if the ray got bad, and you insisted, the police would insist that you went in the shelter. Otherwise, you were liable to injury anyway. And I remember one night when what was called then a landmine, it was a parachute bomb, and it landed on the street where there was a 21st birthday party and pretty well eradicated the whole street, that sort of thing.
Now, anything else about... So you're just going to work and doing a bit of fire watching.
Yeah.
Anything else... You've got your home guard duties as
well. Yeah, that's right.
Anything else about the period before you join up?
Well, I had two sisters, of course. There was the elder sister who was working, but the younger sister got evacuated. First of all, she got evacuated to Henley. And unfortunately, it wasn't a very good place to stay.
Why not?
She didn't get treated terribly well, etc. And my mother brought her back. And I remember we had friends up in Scotland. And I took her up to Scotland. That was up in Morrishire. And these friends were through... My mother used to do a job of work cooking in large house in Ealing, and a couple of the girls there, Scottish girls, parlourmaid, etc. It was through them that my mother sent my younger sister to evacuate up there. And as a matter of fact, I brought her back before I went into the service, and she developed a very Scottish accent by that time. And of course, my elder sister later on went into the WAF.
But that's after you'd gone.
I'm sorry.
That's after you'd joined up.
No, she was in the WAF round about the same time. She was in clerical work in the WAF. I volunteered in the January.
Now, take me through, why did you decide to volunteer? What was behind it in your mind?
Well, the very fact of what was happening to people, and I felt that I could do something worthwhile. It wasn't a morbid sense of kidding people or anything like that at all, but it was the fact that, as a matter of fact, when I decided to volunteer, the firm I worked for refused, said I could be a reserved occupation. And I said, no, I didn't want this. And as I say, I went and volunteered in the January.
It's January 41. Yeah. Now, where did you go to? What
was I went to a drill hall in Acton, TA Centre, which, as a matter of fact, I went to join the Fleet Air Arm. There was a long delay in taking you in for the Fleet Air Arm, and I can always remember coming out of the room. Next door was the RAF recruiting man. He said, why didn't you come in here? And that's how I went into the Air Force.
Why had you thought the Fleet Air Arm? Was that with your dad being a merchant sailor?
Yes, I suppose there was something to that. Looking back, of course, I'm very pleased I never got into the Fleet Air Arm. I mean... landing on an aircraft carrier is not exactly the same as landing on an airfield. But, no, I went in and...
Now, what did you volunteer as?
I volunteered as a pilot, and they put you through... First of all, you had a medical.
Now, tell me about that.
Yeah.
What was that like?
A straightforward medical before they sent you up to Euston House, where you had an aircrew medical.
And what was that like?
Well, this is, you probably heard this before, you blew up the Mercury, you know, and hold it, etc. And I passed that, and you were passed then to be pilot, navigator, or wireless operator. And you were put on standby sort of thing. You were, although you were brought into the Air Force, you didn't get paid, and they waited. You waited till you got called up.
So you carried on working.
You carried on working, definitely.
So what happened next?
Well, in actual fact, the call up came in July of that year, and believe it or not, we had to report to Lord's Cricket Ground.
Now, what did your parents think when you were called up? I mean, they knew you'd volunteered, but did they react at all when you were called?
No, I think my mother, she was very keen on the First World War of volunteering, so she had no objections whatsoever.
Wasn't worried about you?
No.
Now, what happened at, that was the, is it the Air Crew Receiving Centre at Lord's?
Yeah, ACRC, as they used to call it, yeah.
Now, what actually happened when you got there? Because you were always interested in how you, because you're a civilian.
Yeah.
You've never been in this.
No.
You've been in the Home Guard.
Well.
Not much else.
I'll tell you something very interesting there, as a matter of fact. It was in the summertime, and in actual fact, there was a cricket match on at the time. It's probably the London Fire Brigade or something playing somebody else. We sat in the stands there, and so many were called out at a time, and we had to go to the Holy of Holies, the long room at Lord's. And the long room's got big picture window, etc., you know, and you could look out straight onto the pitch. And the surprising thing was that we got in there, and we were lined up, and they said, this is an FFI, free from infection. Drop your trousers. And subsequently, I should always remember after the war, there was a program came on the television which said, I've got a secret. And I was always, I would have liked to have sent up and said that my secret was that I've done something that no cricketer has ever done. In other words, dropped his trousers in the long room. That was that. We were billeted in blocks of flats.
And what was the accommodation like?
The accommodation, they were luxury flats there, which were evacuated, and we just slept on the floor.
Several to a room then, obviously.
Oh, yes, I mean, quite big rooms there. This was outside the Regent's Park area.
So quite good accommodation, really.
Well, yes, as such. I mean, we didn't get beds or anything, we just lying on the ground on the floor there, but we were there from July for I think we were there till the August bank holiday, so that would take it to about 2 weeks.
Now, what were they doing there during that 2 weeks? What sort of, I mean, firstly they'd be kitting out, wouldn't they?
Yeah, kitting out.
Now, tell
where we also got flying stuff.
Now tell me what kit they gave you, as much as you can remember.
Well, we finished up with two kit bags, your ordinary stuff, your uniform, great coat, etc., tin helmet, and then we had an inner suit, padded inner jacket, suit for flying, and I forget what they called the thing now, it was an outer suit of
Sidcup,
yeah. And we had to carry all this around with us when we moved. I mean, we hadn't seen an aeroplane, obviously. We had instruction on...
What training were they doing then?
Well, we used to take lectures, funny enough, in Regent's Park, because it was fine weather, it was the summertime. And...
What would they be in?
Air Force law, etc. And also we had various tests, night vision tests, inoculations, that sort of thing. We were moved.
What were the night vision tests like? Cause
You sat round the table, always remember, and you were clipped by a clothes peg to the chair so that you couldn't lean forward. And there was a box in the middle of the table, and you had to describe on a write down what you saw. It might be a cross, that sort of thing. Things seemed to go quite well.
Didn't have any problem with that? Your night vision
was
good? Oh,
no, my night vision was good.
And how were you getting on with the other recruits? You know, you're all joining. Were they the same sort of lad? What were they like?
Well, it was very... a camaraderie which you never existed outside, really. I mean, you had particular friends. Obviously, we were great friends and you got on well with them. But everybody was keen to, you know, get going and start flying.
So you all bound by a common purpose?
Oh, yes, yeah. And we got moved out on the bank holiday Monday.
So it's mid August-ish.
August bank holiday, the beginning of August.
Right.
Down to Torquay, which was ITW, initial training wing.
Do you know which one?
I think. I was at 3 ITW Torquay.
And you went there in August.
Yeah.
Now, what was the setup at the number 3 initial?
The setup was we were billeted in a second class boarding house. Very much in the 40 Towers.
Tell me about that, because so this was the owners were still there then.
No, the owners weren't there. No, the RAF had taken it over. Yeah, and
so what were these billets like?
Well, they were comfortable enough. We had. First thing in the morning, you had breakfast in the place, and then you came out and did. You were marched. Well, as a matter of fact, we did a very fast pace down there, very similar, not quite as fast as the Gurkhas do, but I think it's about 140 to the minute. One good thing was that being in the summertime, they actually issued us with toweling open neck shirts, which we could wear during the day. Once you got to tea time, you had to change. But you were marched around the town for various lectures, etc.
Now, what was the drill? Let's do the drill first.
Yeah.
How did you take to drill? Because you'd done a bit in the...
I'm very good, actually.
You didn't have any problems with it?
No problems, no.
Did you see the point of it as a young lad?
Oh, yes, I think so. Finally, 6 weeks we were there, I never felt fitter in my life.
But there's other ways of getting fit than drill. I mean,
oh, yes, yes.
I mean, what was the point of drill? I mean, did you understand?
Well,
that?
To get you used to discipline.
And you Definitely. Had no problem with that?
I had no problem.
Now, you're marching about between lectures. Now, yes. What were you being lectured in?
Well, you had Morse code practice. We also did clay pigeon shooting.
Right. So when you say lectures, you mean training sessions?
Well, training sessions,
now,
yes.
Tell me about the Morse code training. How did they actually try and train you in Morse code?
They gave you a key, etc., and you learnt the code, and you gradually increased your speed.
Now, what did they want you to get to? Because there's very, you know...
I'm not certain of that. I may be wrong if I say... 12, I'm not certain.
And did you have any problems? Because some people can't do it, some people...
No, I had no problems whatsoever on that.
Now, what about the clay pigeon shooting?
Clay pigeon shooting was... I thoroughly enjoyed that.
You'd not done any shooting before, had you?
No, none whatever.
How did you take to it?
Very well. If by any chance an activity outside was bad weather, well, they used to take us down to the swimming bars and we used to go into bars using just our ordinary shorts, as a matter of fact.
So, with the swimming, could you swim already?
I could swim, but not a great deal.
And were they doing dinghy drill at the same time?
Yes, sometimes if you were taken there to do dinghy drill.
Now, what other types of training were you doing?
I say navigation, aero engines.
Well, let's do navigation.
Theory of flight.
What level of navigation? What type of thing were you doing?
Working out courses.
And how would you do that?
Converting them on the triangular system, you know, of just basic navigation.
And you had no problem? Your maths was up to it?
No,
You'd
no.
like maths?
Oh, yes, yeah.
What else were you doing? You mentioned aero engines. How far into them were you going?
Well, you've got an explanation of aero engines right the way through. What else would we have?
Would you have theory of flight?
Theory of flight. definitely. Anything connected with flying come to that, that was necessary. You also were taken, obviously, for lectures on health, you know, VD lectures in the local cinema, that sort of thing. And we were told at the end of our 6 weeks that we would be going overseas for training.
That you would be? Or you?
Yeah, we would be. And we were given, as a matter of fact, extra coupons, clothing coupons, to buy yourself lightweight vests and things like that. And we were told to come back after, it was only a very short leave, actually.
This would be, what, September?
September, that's right. And we were then entrained and we were sent up to Wilmslow, Manchester. And
Is that just a camp?
Yeah, it's a reception centre.
What were you doing there?
Not a lot. You had to parade in the morning. There were two parades a day, actually. You paraded in the morning and paraded in the afternoon, and your names were called out. And I can remember there were about, after about the third day, those whose names didn't go called out had to fall out. And I was amongst 30 people who, for some reason or other, by this time, the names didn't get called out. Incidentally, we were told to mark our bags. What was the thing? The Arnold. This was the scheme that we found out afterwards, was the to go to America to train with the Army Air Corps. And as I say, we had our civilian car. Oh, we were issued with civilian suits.
They gave them you.
Oh yeah, grey suits. And
were they all identical?
All identical, plain grey suit, and you were supposed to wear your blue shirt, black tie, and as a matter of fact, I think we were given a berry. It was most peculiar, actually. We weren't given any tropical kit or anything like that. We were sent to Wilmslow, as I say, and after these 30 of us, the draft moved out. And they went up to Gourock, and they got on the ship. The 30 of us were left in an empty camp. This is rather strange, because they didn't seem to know what to do with us, and we got sent, of all places, to Cambridge from there. When we got down to Cambridge...
So you weren't going with the draft now?
No, we were taken off the draft, in effect, where our names didn't appear for some reason or the other. And when we got to Cambridge,
so
nobody...
That was still September? Try to keep an eye on.
September...
October?
October, yeah.
So where were we going to at Cambridge?
When we got to Cambridge, nobody knew what we were there for. So they sent us back again. So we then go up to Wilmslow again, and we were told we would be on the next draft. We had to give the suits in, by the way. That didn't come off. And
hand them in.
Hand them in. It was funny how they measured you for that, because there was a warrant officer who would come down and give his idea on what measurements he thought by just looking at you, you see. Anyway, eventually we go out and we'll get sent up to Gourock.
So when would this be?
This would be October.
Still October?
Yeah, still October. And... we get on a troop ship, which was called the Pasteur. Now, the Pasteur was built by the French to take the Blue Ribbon of the Atlantic. You know, the liners vied for doing the fastest crossing at that time. And we went on the Pasteur to Halifax in Canada.
What was that journey? What were conditions like on the trip?
Not terribly good.
Why?
You were put down. First of all, I mean, we were told to go down into a large place below the waterline. We didn't realise it looked very big at the time, but of course, when the bulkheads came down, they were enclosed in various sections. And you either slept on the tables there, or you were given a hammock, and you made the best of sleeping in a hammock, which was rather funny.
So what was funny about it? What happened?
Well, I mean, I'd never used a hammock in my life before. Once you got in, it was very comfortable, actually. And... Um,